I would like to welcome our CTO, Chief Technology Officer from our corporation, Norm Tjuda. Welcome to the stage, Norm.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today, and thank you, everybody, who's watching remotely. We had a great start this morning that was a little bit of looking back at some old phones and some new phones, and then a lot of talking about the present and the technology that's available today and the things that you can do today, whether you're at home, at work, whether you're flying, whether you're traveling, and how you can work better and collaborate better. What I want to do, though, is look a little bit ahead and look to the next 3 years and try and give you a perspective of how we're investing and how we see some of these changes being implemented. So I'll talk a little bit about what we can do today, but more interestingly, how things can be different. Let me start off with this, though, which is I get this question all the time, which is, what does a CTO do? And it's really about three things: strategy, quality, and people. Strategy is deciding on what to do technically and when. Both of those are important. Quality is making sure that you do it correctly. And then people, which is where I spend a lot of my time, is talking to technical people both externally but also internally. And so this morning, this is about strategy. This is about technology. It's about what. It's about the future and the when. It's about those two things. So let's sort of drill down a little bit more into that and see where that takes us. We talked a little bit about some of the waves of technology. We started off with rotary dial and went to touch in the descriptions earlier. But what we've seen is that these technology discontinuities generally have happened every 10 years. It generally tends to happen about every 10 years that something different happens. And the cloud that we're dealing with today is not a technology that's available today. Technology for the cloud has really been around for a while. And the cloud, the sort of future wave that we're looking for, is how do we use the cloud? And what does it mean for some of the things that you do today, and how are they going to change in the future? So when we think about future products, we're thinking about what are some of these things going to be different in terms of machine learning, in terms of understanding your intent, for example. So in that Link demo that you saw, the second part of the Link talking to the service desk, in that part of the demo, if I know who you are, I know what your machine is, I know what language you're in, I can start to do some very interesting things inside of Link because I know your context and I know your intent. And so the future is actually about understanding as much as we can about you, what you're doing, what kind of behaviors you've got, so we can be predictive of what you're trying to do. And so we really are at this major discontinuity of architectures. Those discontinuities that I've showed you before, each one of them was a little bump along the way. But where we are today with the cloud is having a massive change. And it's having that change both on IT, both on users inside of the corporation, but even more so with consumers. Because the consumers of your products and services now have an opinion, and they can now express that opinion. And what is it that you're going to do about that? Do you care what they say? Is there some action that you can take against that? And so this discontinuity is probably one of the biggest that we've seen in the last 40 years. It's probably of the same magnitude as the introduction of the PC, as the internet. And then this next generation is really going to turn our lives as IT professionals upside down in different ways. There's lots of interesting technologies that are going to play, some of which are current and some of which we're playing with. Even when you look at something like connectivity and network connectivity, connectivity today is generally much better than it was many years ago. But we still have the situation in this room of intermittent connectivity. So it's not about creating devices that are always connected. It's about writing software and writing solutions and writing experience that are mostly connected. But what happens when you have no connection? Does your phone, does your tablet still allow you to do the things that you want to do when you have no connection? So we think that connectivity and dealing with connectivity of different kinds is important. We think about data and massive volumes of data and what you're going to do about it. And more importantly, from an investment perspective, from what we're doing, is machine learning and machine intent, which is accessing all of this information and processing it and looking at it and looking at history and looking at what you're doing and really trying to help you. So from an investment perspective, we think that machine learning is important. And we think that machine learning, by the way, is very tightly coupled into natural user interfaces. Because when you start to type something into a search box or type something into a link box, the more we know about you and your intent, where we can take spelling mistakes and correct them, or languages and correct them. So for example, one of the things that you can do in Link today is if I know, because of your location that you give to me, that you're in Austria, but you're talking somebody in China, or somebody in Japan, or somebody in Paris, you can type in German, and they'll see it in French, and they'll type in French, and you'll see it in German. I should be able to do that automatically, because I know who you are and where you are, and I know from your patterns that you like to type in German. Even though you can understand French, I can understand that and then be predictive and understand the intent of what you're trying to do. But one of the real tensions that has been created, and we're all responsible for this, is the tensions between the enterprise and enterprise software and the purchasing people who buy software, and then those consumers. There's hundreds of millions of consumers who move quickly, who are agile, who are the users. And the tension that has been created is really allowing us to redefine what management looks like, what interaction looks like, what's enablement look like, what does collaboration look like in this new world. And it's this tension that, although it has created a tension, has really been the driving force of some fantastic technology to develop and think about. And so when I look ahead, I think about the notion of devices, different kinds of devices, and the services that enable that device to provide fantastic solutions. But in the end, it's the applications that deliver that functionality. It's the applications that run on the device, that consume the services, that allow us to do incredible things, whether we're collaborating amongst ourselves or whether we're collaborating with a broader audience. We tend to think of devices typically as one of these three things that you're carrying with you, a phone, a tablet, or a laptop. But devices are much broader than that. Devices are about a car. The way to think about a car is a data center on wheels. It has three networks, has about 20 CPUs, has at least one communication path externally. It's actually a little data center that's driving around all the time. It has lots of sensors on it. The amount of code that goes into an anti-locking brake system is about 300,000 lines of code just to do the anti-lock brakes. So think about a car as really a very sophisticated device, but it could be your fridge, it could be a little device like this, it could be a device at work, it could be a device measuring temperature. Devices are everywhere, and devices have different kinds of user experiences. This device has a button, it doesn't have a user display. But I could be dealing with a very large touch display that's the size of a wall. And so devices are of all shapes and sizes, some are stationary and some are moving. And the interesting architectural challenge is how do those devices then consume the services? But what we then find is that not only the devices, but the applications are everywhere. Applications can be personal applications, they can be applications for the device, they could be anonymous applications that anybody can use. This is different. This is actually different to where we came from. Because typically applications are the thing that you carried with you on your computer or an application at your desk. And now we have expectations of applications everywhere. But not only everywhere, applications are for everyone. It's amazing watching young children pick up a touch device, whether it's a tablet or a phone, and they can learn it really quickly. Have you ever watched a little kid stand in front of a Kinect game and play the Kinect game? They figure out pretty quickly that if you move your hands like this, it does something. And so the kinds of people who use applications and their expectations has changed. And as IT providers, we have a decision that we can make. Do we want to change with them or do we want to stay in the old world? And we better change quickly because the expectations of our users have changed dramatically. And when I think about the enterprise context, I think about two kinds of applications. What I'll call systems of record, the financial systems, the HR systems, the taxing systems. Those systems are ERP, CRM-like apps that have a particular kind of experience and user interface. But the attributes of that application, how quickly they change, how we think about quality, how we think about change management, how we think about changing business rules for sales tax, for example. It's a very structured, rigorous way. But the thing that's probably different today than any other times are these systems of engagement, these wonderful new applications that are completely engaging to the user on the device that they're on, that are adaptive, they're learning, they change, they help you get the things done that you need to get done. And those attributes of quality, of time, of maintenance, of the ability to actually dynamically change them, the expectations that are created there are very different than the expectations that are in the system of record. So from an IT perspective, if you put yourself into Lucas's shoes and you think about his job, he has to live with these two worlds. He has to live with the world of compliance and the world where he has some users who are very demanding on getting the applications they need and getting them in a way that they can pick them up often. I travel a lot. I travel around the world a tremendous amount. And I also go to India. For any of you who have been to India, you'll understand this story. There's a series of applications that the Indian airport companies have put out. And this is an application, in this case, for the New Delhi airport. It's a very compelling application that talks to you about the flights that they're coming and when they change and how to navigate through the airport, which can be fairly complicated. And they've realized that delivering this application is key to their users. But when you think about the underlying attributes of a modern application, what makes them different to an application from previously, outside of the agility of the application, outside of the application changing quickly? The real thing about these apps is that they're personal. They're about you. They learn about the way you behave, they learn about the way you react, and they change and they adapt. They need to be able to deal with connections and no connections, because even if you're not connected, I still want to know what gate my plane is going to go from. I still want to have and carry those documents with me to really understand the work that I need to carry. And so the nature of these applications have changed, and the expectations of your users has changed dramatically, which really makes us, from an IT perspective, have to think carefully about the design problem. It's not just about the underlying architecture. It is about the underlying experience as well. One of the key differentiators is that applications that we built 5 years ago, 10 years ago, were designed to be standalone. They were designed to run in a standalone environment. I could carry my laptop with me, and I could do the work on my laptop when I was not connected. Probably the biggest structural change that's happened in our applications is all applications today are connected. All applications are connected or mostly connected in one way or another. And they're generally connected along two channels. The first channel is the data channel of the application itself, but the second channel is this telemetry channel. It's the channel that tells me about what's going on. It tells me about you and your intent. But I also understand a lot about how you're using the application. I understand about the infrastructure, about the connectivity, about the environment that you're in, where you are. I understand the APIs that the application is calling. So for all of you who write applications, for all of you who use applications, think about these two channels. And what's interesting about this environment, when I'm bringing all this data in, this is about creating business intelligence for IT. I find it fascinating that in IT, we develop business intelligence for everybody else, for sales, for marketing, for operations, but we've never developed business intelligence for ourselves. And these applications provide us with the vehicle that as the writer of the application, as the designer, as the architect, I can start to understand more and more about what my users are doing and how they're doing it. There's some great examples of these modern applications. This is an application from Korea. It's a Coca-Cola vending machine, but you have to dance in front of the machine to get a Coke out. There's a Kinect that's put in the machine, and you stand on that little red dot, and there's a video that plays a dance, and you have to dance. And when you dance, and if you get it right, you get a Coke bottle out the other end. It's amazing to watch people using this device and thinking about it, and really having them learn how to do it. These are applications. These are modern applications. They're not just about how you work. It's about how Coca-Cola, in this case, interacts with their consumers and how they learn about their consumers and how they can build an engaging relationship with their consumers. Here's another fantastic example, Santander Bank. This is a Windows 8 application that runs in the modern interface. And we learned some interesting things about the user experience when we built this application with them. Previously, they had built an app for themselves on the other tablets. And in the bank, they have their own test case, has a customer who has 50 credit cards. I have a few, but I don't have 50. 50 credit cards is their test case in the bank. And on the tablet application, when they test it, in the existing application that they developed, when you go into the screen for credit cards and you want to go to the next credit card, you hit the next credit card button and the next credit card button. So if you want to see credit card number 45, you have to hit next credit card 45 times. So we built this Windows 8 application for them. And as we were demoing to it, they said, where's the next credit card button? And we had to explain to them that there is no next button. You just pan across the interface until you find it, and then you press number 48. You do not have to cycle through them. And so the nature of the user experience is actually very different in this modern world. User experiences have changed dramatically, and the ability on the phone and on Windows 8 to be able to get this landscape view where you can pan your display backwards and forwards has changed the way the applications are developed. And one of the outcomes of this is that this took a very small team of 3 people to develop this application in less than 3 months. And on the other scenario, it was a large team that took more than a year, because the user experience was different and tailored directly to the audience. So let me give you an idea about how services are going to integrate into these devices. Let's think about search. Search is not about finding things. Search is about what we call task completion. It's about getting things done. And so we think about search in a very different way. We think about search, which is I'm trying to shop something, I'm trying to go somewhere, I'm trying to travel, I'm trying to learn. But in the end, I want to book an air ticket. That's why I'm doing this investigation. So let me show you how that looks and how that might be different. So we think that there's an underlying platform that has a series of search APIs that provide information to the application. And then the application helps you take that information and convert it into getting the work done, into completing the task that you're trying to do. And it's a matter of doing this combination of people, places, and things and presenting that to you in incredibly interesting ways. So if I did a search for traveling to New York, Delhi, this is what I would see today. I'd see a white screen that has a bunch of links. No matter whose search engine, you kind of see something like this. There's a Bing application in Windows 8, which instead of giving you little links in a row, it gives you little boxes in a row. But basically, it's the same kind of idea. How could this be done differently? So let's look at this next one. This is the travel application that's available in Windows 8 today. It comes on every device if you have one. This is actually an application that is based on search but presents its results in an incredibly interesting way. So I opened up this application, and it happens to take me to Auckland in New Zealand. I can pan across and I see some of the featured locations that we've got, but this is sort of the home page for travel. I can go back, and now I can do a search in the integrated way that you know Windows 8 does it. I click on the charm, I bring out search, and now I type Delhi. And as you can see in that top left-hand corner, suddenly I've got Delhi. And now I go to an incredibly compelling page with fantastic visuals on it that shows me information about Delhi. Remember, I'm doing a search here. This is an application doing search, but it's not presenting me links. It's showing me compelling information. It's showing me some panoramas of the various things that to see as a tourist around Delhi. It's showing me what restaurants and hotels are there. And I can actually go and page through these in very interesting ways. There's some background information over here that talks about traveling to Delhi, what it's like to be a tourist. And you'll notice in that little blue box, it talks about booking airfare. Oh, okay, I'm interested in going there. So I can click on that. And that takes me to another page that says, still inside of search, that says you want to travel. In this case, I was traveling from Seattle to Delhi. And it takes me to a results page that shows me some planes. And I say, yep, I like to fly Air France. It actually knows a lot about me. So it says, how about flying on Air France, which goes from Seattle to Paris and then Paris into Delhi. And then I go through to the Air France website and I book the ticket. So I go from the notion of travel to the task completion of buying a ticket. This is what search is going to look like. And so this is an application consuming a service. If I didn't tell you that this was doing search, you probably wouldn't know. And that is the way to think about devices and services in every way that we build applications in the future. It's about the application on the device that consumes the services to give you a compelling result that takes you to completion. That is the new generation of applications that are going to be built. And by the way, there's a business model. Because buried inside this application, there happens to be an ad. In this case, Delta Airlines. The system knows that I fly Delta Airlines quite a lot. It actually knows that Air France is a partner of Delta Airlines, and therefore I get an ad for Delta. This is not a little ad on the side, but a compelling visual application, whether it's done inside of an application like this or done inside of your application. And the ad could either be an ad to your consumers, or frankly, the ad could be an internal ad, like Microsoft IT advertising something to me as a user inside of Microsoft. So how these ads land inside of this application is also going to change the way you engage with your particular consumers. What happens to all of this data that then comes back? That's a ton of data, huge volumes of data. Some interesting things have happened with data collection and data storage. In 2008, to actually find, store 1 terabyte of data would cost us $1.5 billion. This year, it's about $50. It's a 30 million variable change that's happened in terms of finding data and getting data and processing data. So when we talk about big data and the ability to process data, first we're talking about big data, lots of data that comes back. But the incredible thing you can do today that you couldn't do before is you can process it. You can actually do something with the data. And whether you do it on your premise or you do it on the cloud, we can do amazing stuff with information to help you make new, interesting decisions. There are a bunch of questions that are being asked. And those questions are, an example is, what are your consumers saying about you? What do your consumers say about you and your products? Do you want to know? Is there some action that you can take about that? And so market research 10 years ago was about somebody knocking on your door, or somebody phoning you, or getting a survey in the mail. That's what market research looks like. Market research today is going onto Facebook and Twitter and listening. Because whether you like it or not, your customers are talking about your products. Maybe it's on your website, maybe it's on Facebook, maybe it's on somebody else's Facebook. But how do you get access to that information and what can you do with it? And so the ability to get the information through the telemetry, the ability to store that information at a reasonable cost, and the ability to process it are really going to change the way applications are put together. And the real difference in this case is where we go from raw data into value. From getting the information from your consumers, processing them, looking at their sentiment, and really being able to react in real time. And part of what this will do is this is going to change the pace at which products change. The rate at which you offer products and services to other people is going to change because of the ability to listen. The ability to listen what's being said out there, whether it's being said in your application, on the big world wide web, you can actually listen to what's being said and take the action on your products in interesting ways. And really it's the conversion from data to intent. The biggest change that probably happens here is the time frame to make those decisions. Previously it took months or years to do those kinds of surveys. Today you can do it in a week and a day. And your ability to respond to something in real time, whether it's high speed that's required for a financial application, where you know you've got to take some action immediately because there's a change in an interest rate, or whether it's slightly slower speed where you're looking at online display ads and looking at your product portfolio, or whether you're looking at a healthcare problem and the penetration of a virus around the world and what it is that you can do about that. In all those cases, the ability to access that data and process that data is really changed. That's one of these massive discontinuities that has happened in the marketplace. So then underlying this is then the cloud operating system. It's the way we think about the way these solutions are being built. That's really made up of two things: modern apps running on the devices and a modern data center. We talk about that as the cloud OS, but it doesn't mean that it's a public cloud or private cloud or a hybrid cloud. It actually, we think of that as sort of a completely integrated environment that has this incredible unbounded opportunity, which is when you take the number of personas and the number of devices and the number of applications, you get a ton of data. And in order to deal with that data, you need a lot of storage, you need a lot of CPU, you need a lot of processing. And so how does that manifest? How do we think about that from an R&D perspective? How do we think about how we're going to make these products available to you and in what time frame? And so one of the things that we've learned over the years of being in the cloud, we've been in the cloud for a long time. You know, Hotmail is a great example, been around for many, many, many years about a cloud email service. But one of the things that we've learned is about standardization in the cloud. And I don't mean standardization where things look the same or you buy them from a single vendor. This is what we call extreme standardization. Everything is identical. So when you go to our cloud data centers, there's Dublin, Munich in Europe, and others, and you open up a container, everything is identical. Every little piece of wire, every fuse, every memory chip, every CPU, every motherboard, every power supply, every plug is identical from rack to rack to rack. And from that, we get incredible economies of scale. we get incredible economies of support, of manageability and simplicity and predictability because of that. And so when we think about how the operating systems can be built, how do you take an operating system that can run on that cloud environment and allow it to run on a server inside of your office or equivalently on a device that's going to consume it? And so we really have to think about this complete platform that can either run on-premise in your data center, can run in the cloud, can run in a cloud that's been run by a hoster for you, or can run in a hybrid scenario, in a mixture of all of those, which is what we see many people doing. But underlying that in the middle, there are a couple of key underlying technologies. Virtualization is an enabling technology, but really nothing more. We think about management, we think about identity as really the two underlying key pieces. Because virtualization is a way of getting things done. What we're more interested in is the abstraction to a service and the manageability of the service and the provisioning of the service.